Acorn to Oak, a tree podcast rooted in real stories and growing knowledge from soil to canopy. Tree care is about more than pruning or removal. It starts with understanding how trees grow and what they need over time. In this episode, we're focusing on how homeowners can protect their trees through better planning, awareness, and access to reliable information. Simon, Matt, have you both been this week?
Fine. Thanks for asking, Stephanie.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah, I'm coming off of a little bit of a cold. You might hear that in my voice, but, you know, once you start feeling better.
Well, you've passed it on to me because I've got a sore throat.
Matt feels better. The rest of us have a sinus infection. Anything today been entertaining?
Yeah, just coming in and seeing Matt, that makes me laugh.
Yeah?
Yeah. He's such a ray of delight and joy.
I do what I can.
Are you guys ready to tackle this topic?
Let's tackle it.
Does anyone have a specific example of something that stands out to you that homeowners accidentally do that is a big no in the world of arboriculture?
I'm glad you brought that up. I do, but I should probably let Simon go so he doesn't get frustrated as I start taking all of the common mistakes that are made on...
Oh, come on now, Matt. You know, we've been arborists for a long time. You've seen it all. And, yeah, you know, some things are more detrimental to tree health than others. A lot of the common mistakes that people make are simple and harmless, they think, and they end up forgetting them, you know, because trees just stay still in the yard and they don't move. But they're an organic being and they are a life force and they need attention, just like any other life force. And so, you know, when you use a tree as a something to support some implements or whatever,
like, and a swing or
swings,
tire.
Yeah, and putting a swing in a tree is not that big of a deal, as long as it's done the right way and it's not left, you know, for long. Like, I've got a swing in my yard on this big, huge white oak, and it was put in there from my original owners, the people that built the house, and they had three kids, and they tied a rope around this branch about, I don't know, 30 feet up in on this big branch, and it's completely grown in. Like, it's completely girdled. The branch has died back quite a bit, but it's still alive, and it's remarkable to see that the tree has actually kind of encompassed that rope. I ended up climbing up there and cutting it free, so hopefully that helped. But yeah, that's one thing. Using trees as a method of support, and, you know, tying your dog chain or a clothesline or something like that, you know, a fairly common one, you know, especially with cables, wrapping cables around trees, and then, you know, before you know it, 5 years has passed and the tree's growing several inches in diameter and it's starting to girdle itself and it's growing in, and now it's either killed that part of the tree from there above, or, you know, it's starting to grow in to a point where you can't get to the cable to cut it anymore.
Yeah, so with the dog chain, obviously leaving it on and girdling the tree, but does it cause any damage? Like the rubbing of the cable, is that a concern, or is it mostly just leaving and girdling?
Yeah, I think it's the fact that it's just leaving it and girdling it, so it starts to encompass the, you know, the whole stem. You know, rubbing is, you know, it happens. It's as long as it doesn't rub the bark completely raw, and that gives an avenue for, you know, decay and what have you to start taking place, but that rarely happens. I've never seen that happen. If you monitor, it's like anything, if you monitor your trees regularly, and you, people aren't just aware of it, you know, they just don't know, and they don't think about it. You know, us as arborists, we tend to look at the trees on a regular basis. I look at mine kind of obsessively to some degree.
Can either of you give some basic monitoring examples that someone who isn't an arborist, who's just a homeowner, what they might look for, how they might, you know, how often they might go out and monitor their trees?
Yeah, that would have been, it goes along with one of my biggest mistakes that people make, and that is waiting until there is a problem. So that goes along with what we're talking about as far as actively monitoring trees. Typically, I am advising property owners to, you're most definitely monitoring your trees, and that's basically just walking around. You're going to evaluate or assess the tree from the base of the tree, even walking around the root zone of the tree, and then visually just working your way up the trunk, looking for any splits, cracks, missing bark, could be pest-related, like galleries or anything under the bark that might be seen.
Could you explain what a gallery under the bark might look like?
Gallery would be like a tunneling of the typically of the larvae of an insect that would be just tunneling and working its way through.
That's kind of hard to see though, unless you've got loose bark.
Yeah. So I mentioned loose bark, but then all beyond that, looking for that tunneling. But a lot of times I'm walking homeowners through trying to identify structural issues, looking at large branch unions, you know, splitting or cracking in those branch unions, whether it's a U-shaped branch union versus a tight V-shaped branch union. I try to educate homeowners on identifying those structural issues or structural weaknesses within the canopy.
Would you mind explaining that more, like the U and the V-shape, to our listeners?
Yeah, so U-shaped branch unions, a lot of times I use my hand and I make a U-shape with my thumb and my four other fingers, and I say, you know, a U-shape is going to be a stronger union. And we're talking about looking at the overall structure of the tree where there's large branches or multiple leaders that come together. And a lot of times I'm identifying those large branches or tops that could possibly fail and impact a target below the tree, whether it's a house, a vehicle, playground, a garden, really anything. And so I'll specifically look at those and look to see how they are attached to the trunk or to other branches. If it's a tight V-shaped branch union, they can have weaknesses. Not all the time, but I'll point them out. I'll walk them through that. I don't go over detailed about it with them. I just try to point it out to them. And then it depends on the time of the year. I'll have them, a lot of times what I'll do is when in the summer when they're fully leafed out, I will have them actually take a photo of it with their iPad or with their phone, and then be able to, and then each year take a photo of it and have them assess the overall color of the leaves, the density of the canopy itself, and see if there's any changes. And that's a great way to just monitor year to year for the overall health of the tree.
You say color, you're talking about the color would change in what way?
The green, you know, almost all leaves are green, right, with the exception of a few, but at times you might see a change in color, such as yellowing, which could identify a nutrient deficiency.
Or a different shade of green, just a slightly brighter shade.
But a lot of times it's about density, because one of the top things, and this can lead into another issue that I personally see, when I'm talking about the leaf density or the overall density of the canopy, and also dieback from the upper canopy, I see it everywhere. If you drive around, as Simon was saying, as arborists, we kind of have a disease where we're just constantly assessing trees no matter where we are.
I wouldn't call it a disease. I'd call it an affliction.
But oftentimes when I'm talking to homeowners, I'm looking at their tree, and one of the most common things that I see is dieback in the upper canopy of the tree, which is related most of the time to some type of root issue. You know, and then a lot of times that issue is drought stress. We'll have periods in the spring where we'll have a lot of rain. It'll be cooler weather, but then it seems like over the last 8 to 10 years, we go straight into 90 degree weather and lack of precipitation, which leads to lack of soil moisture within the soil. Those fine little feeder roots that are absorbing water and nutrients and sending that water up through the larger roots and up the trunk and out to the leaves, those fine little roots start to dry out. And when they start to dry out, they start to die back. And when they start to die back, the tree can no longer effectively uptake water and send it out to the leaves, especially to the upper canopy. So you'll start to see consistent dieback along the upper canopy. It is by far the most common thing that I see. It's not always related to drought. It could be some other root stress, could be root cutting, it could be soil compaction, but that for me, is one of the number one things that I see. So,
well, you don't have to.
So you're talking about drought, lack of water, or possible soil compaction. Sounds like we need to not just be looking up, but we need to be looking down at our soil and monitoring it as well. Let's start with the lack of water. What is a good recommendation for watering? How much? How often? To keep things like crown dieback from happening.
You know, you want to check the moisture first.
How would a homeowner check their soil moisture? And is it something that is pretty easy for them to do themselves?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you can buy a little soil moisture tester, mm-hmm. the probe, and you can pop it into the soil, you know, mm-hmm. a couple of 3 inches down in there, and it'll give you a reading whether or not the soil is moist or dry. And, you know, then you can react appropriately. You know, if you see like the soil is dry, mm-hmm. and then, you know, just put some sprinkler hoses out or soaker hoses. Soakers are better because you don't lose a lot of
evaporation.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, early in the morning is good. It's the best time to do that. Most people don't have the time to do it because they have to go to work. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you can do it in the evening, then that's just as well.
How long should they be out there for, like, just say, like, they have one large oak in their yard? How long should they be watering during a pretty dry period?
I'd say probably a couple of hours, you know, just let it mm-hmm. on a soak just for a couple of hours. And you can, like, move the sprinkler around. If you use a mm-hmm. sprinkler, you can just move it around every 20 minutes, half an hour, you know. Just to get some water is going to be better than none. Mm-hmm. So that'll always help, for sure.
There's definitely formulas out there that you can find as far as so many gallons per diameter, inch per, you know, dBH or the diameter of the trunk. But really, it really is just common sense. Just trying to evenly saturate the soil across the whole root zone, all the way out to the drip line of the tree. You don't want to just stick a hose at the base of the tree, which a lot of people do because they just don't know any better. Those feeder roots that are absorbing water and nutrients in the soil, they're really, I would say, in the top 12 inches of the soil, right underneath your grass, if you have grass. And on large trees, that those feeder roots can grow out past the drip line. The drip line is kind of how far the canopy extends out all the way across. So it's important to evenly distribute that water all the way out past the drip line of the tree. You know, and this could leads into a whole nother mistake, that is growing trees in lawn.
Okay. Could you explain this more to our listeners? We obviously see trees in our lawns all the time. Is there a specific tree that would be better for our yards?
There's really no tree that likes to grow in a lawn setting. A lot of people don't know that. They see parks, they see their neighbors, and there is a lot of competition for water nutrients, especially in those summer months when there's a lack of rainfall. So
you're saying competition with the turf, correct?
Yeah, competition with the turf. Years ago, I went to a conference, and this arborist and educator got up there and spoke on, we really just need to get back to nature with trees. I mean, they are a natural organism that's growing in our environment, and we need to treat them like that.
This sets the stage for a bigger conversation about how trees thrive naturally and what we can do in our own yards and urban spaces to reduce stress on trees and create healthier soil conditions.
I like to educate homeowners on the importance of mulch, and basically just, you know, when you walk out into the forest, when you were a kid, you would dig around in the under the leaves in the soil in the forest, and that soil is so healthy and full of microorganisms and beneficial fungi. And basically by putting a layer of mulch under your tree all the way out to the drip line of the tree, if possible, is one of the most beneficial things you can do to counter that drought stress, to get rid of that competition between the grass and the tree roots, and start introducing some of that, those beneficial organisms and fungi. As that organic matter from the mulch breaks down into the soil, not only will it promote that type of activity, that biological activity, it will also reduce evaporation. It will aerate the soil over time. There's just so many benefits to it. We could talk about mulch for an hour, all the benefits. So a lot of people look at mulch as just like this aesthetic thing that they have to do every year, but it's much, much more than that. As arborists, those aesthetics are the last thing that we care about. We care more about the benefits that mulch promotes in trees.
One thing homeowners don't always think about is what's happening below ground. Construction and landscape projects can impact tree roots in ways that aren't always obvious. Can we talk about how homeowners can still enjoy permanent outdoor features like patios, walkways, and retaining walls while also protecting the long-term health of their tree?
Sure, definitely. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, that's definitely a hot topic with regards to tree stress. Construction damage is probably one of the most destructive ways to impede the health of the tree. And especially in people's back gardens, they want to build a patio or a wall or something like that. There are alternatives. I know you kind of have to just kind of try and design it so you give the tree as much room as possible before you do any excavation and digging. And then there are some tools you can use. They're expensive, but you can hire arborists to blow out. It's called air spading, where you can actually do excavation with an air spade, and then you blow the soil out, and then you can cut the roots, and cut roots can heal better. It's just like pruning branches up in the canopy. They'll close that wound. Whereas when you use an excavator, it tends to rip and tear roots, and kind of goes further back past the point of excavation. But also compaction as well. You can alleviate some compaction by applying mulch in areas where you're going to be taking machinery, prior to that happening. And then once that work is done, then you can move the mulch or take it, leave it there preferably, but, you can take it back. And then, you get some situations where you have no choice. You have utilities that have been trenched down into your yard, to get a phone line or cable or whatever, trenched down through you. And, you can't get avoid that. You need the utilities to the house, a gas line, what have you. Well, they need to dig up a sewer line. They tend to wreak just absolute havoc on these trees. But if you actually get an arborist in prior to that happening, do a little bit of consultation, there may be some other solutions. You could potentially make the trench a different area that's not going to affect the tree as much. Or, like I said earlier, use an air spade. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more expensive, but, you kind of value the, you put a value on your tree and how important is that tree to you?
Yeah.
It's expensive to remove a tree.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to keep the tree, so something was installed, some damage was done to the roots. Is there anything a client can do to try to mitigate some of that damage?
Yeah, you can do some deep root feeding after the fact. Mulching is also really beneficial. Air spading, again, we use air spade to punch holes into the ground to kind of break up the compaction. Mm-hmm. With different, you can use some. The deep root feeding we use is generally a probe that we stick into the ground, and it injects like organic matter into the soil that adds carbon and other beneficial bacteria that helps break up the soil and adds more carbon to the soil, and then also adds beneficial bacteria and fungus to the soil as well to regenerate.
And this is specifically for compaction or for both compaction or root?
For both. Yeah, it's always beneficial,
especially
watering at the very least. Yeah.
Watering will help, yeah, for sure, mm-hmm. definitely. Yeah. Mulch on top of that, mulch actually brings worms and stuff up mm-hmm. through the surface, and they help aerate the soil naturally. So those are all really good ways of trying to mitigate some of the damage that's been done.
I think on a more basic level too, sometimes it's just a matter of getting homeowners to understand that, most of the time they're so focused on the tree, the upper canopy, everything that you can visually see above the ground. But I'm consistently talking and trying to educate them on the root system of the tree, the soil that surrounds those roots. That's the lifeline of the tree. So getting them to understand what's underneath there and how expansive those roots can be is the number one objective. Because without healthy roots and healthy soils around the tree, everything can go downhill if not treated appropriately. Yeah, if somebody severs one large root on a tree, especially near the base of the tree, that can lead to a whole network of roots that are responsible for not only anchoring the tree, but just feeding the tree, giving it water, uptaking those water nutrients. And if you cut one large root, just because you can't see the roots, it can have a major impact, negative impact on the tree. So just being really cautious about any type of work you're doing in the root zone of a tree.
okay, you're going to do a project in the backyard, and it's like to plan ahead, stop any of those problems from happening prior to the project being done, mm-hmm. rather than reacting after. I mean, generally, we get called in after the fact. You know, my tree's starting to decline. When, did you have any construction done? Yeah, we had this mm-hmm. patio put in 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, or they had to excavate the foundation, and they had a big excavator in here and stuff, and that happened about 4 or 5 years ago. You know, and then now you're starting to see effects, you know, and people think, well, that was 4 or 5 years ago. Well, that, you know, it takes a long time for these effects to take place. Usually it's between 3 and 7 years you start to see construction damage taking place.
It sounds like a little preparation before starting a project can make a big difference in the long-term health of trees on our properties. Are there any other common issues or mistakes you see that you think our listeners should be aware of?
The removal or the previous removal of large diameter branches that a lot of times, you know, tree services that, you know, that may not have a certified arborist on staff, they just listen to the homeowner, and the homeower will call them and say, I want these two large branches over my house removed. They're like, no problem. We can do that for you. And they do it, and they cut, you know, I'd say anything over 6 to 8 inches in diameter. And they leave these large trunk wounds, and it leads to major problems, typically many years down the road, depending on the species of tree. But it's amazing how one large branch removal can compromise the structural integrity of a tree in a 10-year time period, an 8 to 10-year time period. And the next thing you know, the tree's got to be removed. It could be a prize tree that somebody loves, a tree that their grandparents planted in their front yard, and they just didn't know any better, and they themselves as the homeowner either removed the large branch and left a big wound on the trunk. Mm-hmm. It's something we see a lot, and you know, there's other ways to overcome that.
To make it relatable to some of our listeners, like, what would be one reason why a homeowner would maybe even ask for that large branch to even have been removed?
Yeah, a lot of times it's because it's, as the tree matures, it's growing into a home, a garage.
Mm-hmm. Growing over the home even.
Yeah, growing over the home. And they're worried about those branches failing on top of their roof, which is understandable. But what I often talk to them about is these, and a lot of times it's the lower branches that mm-hmm. they can clearly see. But what they don't understand is that those lower branches are what we consider a protection factor. So as those lower branches grow over the home, as long as they have, you know, a good 8 to 10 feet of clearance off of the home, that's fine. But those lower branches are providing protection from any of those branches. You know, if we're talking about an 80-foot tall tree in their front yard, regardless of species, if a large branch breaks out at 60, 70 feet and fails, those lower branches are there to catch it, mm-hmm. redirect it, slow it down. If you cut and remove those lower branches, all of a sudden you could have a branch fall from 60, 80 feet, and then there's a lot more force and impact on the roof, and you could get more damage due to that.
So what do you suggest for these clients who do want a large branch removed that is hanging over their house?
I would definitely, number one, contact somebody who knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, a certified arborist, someone who has experience. And then the arborist can look at the tree and inspect to make sure that it is a problem. And then, you know, recommend some mitigating things, you know, doing some pruning, some weight reduction. You can take some weight off of the branch. Mm-hmm. With lots of small cuts are a lot better than a few big cuts. So, you know, you can reduce a lot of the weight, but still retain the protection factor that Matt was talking about. And then, you know, you can also, if there is a large branch lower down in the tree that you're really concerned about, you can install canopy supports where you can, you know, support it back to the main trunk. For an additional protection and reassurance. I mean, obviously, you have a tree over the house, there's always a risk, you know, it's mm-hmm. just about your kind of risk tolerance. You can reduce those risks definitely by certain things, you know, pruning, canopy support, regular monitoring, you know, that kind of thing. So
then we ask, how do we avoid this? When we think about trees and homes, mature growth isn't always part of the conversation. Some trees may be planted in what seems like an appropriate spot, but eventually grows large enough to extend over homes or structures. In other cases, Trees are simply placed in locations that don't allow them to thrive long term. Can you talk a bit about the importance of proper tree placement and location?
When we get calls about property owners looking for recommendations on trees to plant, there's definitely the proper steps that you have to take. And I did write a blog that's on the Bluestone Tree website that's called Tree Selection, and it walks you through those steps. I won't get into all the details of that. You can take a look at it on our website if you'd like. But, you know, one of the most important basic things is first of all, buying a tree that is healthy and from a reputable nursery. And I won't go any deeper than that, but I'd say that as far as having the right tree planted in the right site is simply looking at that tag that's on that tree or shrub or plant and looking to see what the size of that tree is going to be at full maturity and really sticking with that. It's really difficult because you want to, because it's a small tree when you plant it, and it's hard to realize how large it's going to grow into, you know, over many, many years. So it's easy to plant it in the wrong spot. So really paying attention to that tag. If it says it needs 40 feet of space, you know, it's going to grow 40 feet wide, then giving it that 40 feet of width to grow into.
Yeah, definitely what you're going to be planting near, you know, I mean, near the home, you know, if you've got a tree that reaches maturity, like I said, Matt said, 40 feet, you don't want to plant it within, you know, 10 feet of the house. And then also, that being said, you know, power lines are a big thing. We've got a lot of power lines in the back of these urban environments, you know, back of people's yards. And so people will plant, well, I just want a nice oak tree here, or, you know, or a tulip poplar or something like that, you know, and then they pop it in the ground. And then, you know, 15, 20 years later, all of a sudden the power company's coming along and just cutting the heck out of your tree, you know, just, you know, demolishing its structure. So you want to think about, you know, the height and width. If you are planting trees or planning to plant trees near power lines, then it's always appropriate to pick a species that's not going to get up into the power lines and still provide the needs that you want for your backyard.
You just kind of reminded me of something that you want to plant the tree or plant or shrub in an area where it can fully mature, kind of like what we've been talking about, to where you really don't need to do anything. You just let it grow. There's a little bit of a misconception where that I hear people talk about, and that is like, yeah, I got to get out and do my annual tree trimming or my annual shrub trimming, you know, and that's actually not necessary. I mean, there are certain circumstances where somebody might be maintaining some kind of
hedge
or something like that. But other than that, you know, we typically, once we find the right species for the right site and we properly plant it, which that's a whole nother podcast I think that we're going to be doing is proper planting. So I'm not going to get deep into that, but making sure that that tree's properly planted. Once you've found that proper location, you know, making sure that that tree stays watered, especially through the first few years during the warmer months. Within the first 5 to 7 years, you're going to be either hiring a certified arborist or training yourself on how to properly prune a tree or train the tree for good structure. And typically, if you get that under control within the first 5 to 7 years, there's a good chance that you won't have to touch the tree again. And ideally, you plant it in a spot that it can fully mature. You've set it up with good structure. You've maintained it with proper watering when it's young. And, you know, you still have to continue to do that proper soil moisture management throughout its life. But other than that, you really shouldn't have to do much. I think I just wanted to get that idea that you have to get out and prune your trees every year. Pruning does damage trees. They don't like to be pruned. They don't like to be cut on. They don't like to be wounded. So we try to minimize that. You try to pick the proper species, plant it in the proper site, and let it do its thing. Let it grow to its full potential.
So how do we help homeowners avoid these situations in the first place? What kind of guidance or planning can protect them from costly or stressful issues down the road?
Well, just like, you know, educating yourself on different things that trees require and need, and then what they don't need. And then also, you know, it's definitely probably worthwhile, you know, hiring an arborist to come in and give you these recommendations. I mean, I think we do a consultation. It's pretty reasonable, actually. It's pretty cheap, but, you know, get a lot of information from that. And then from that, then you can take that information and, you know, either choose to use a company to do some work, or you can do a lot of the work yourself. Matt and I both have been arborists for a long time, and both of us are proponents of tree maintenance, tree health, and tree preservation. And so there were also, you know, it's much better to empower the person to do it themselves if they can, you know, as long as they're capable of it. Obviously, you know, not many homeowners want to climb 80 feet into a tree to do some pruning and take some dead branches out, but, you know, we can definitely, you know, the structural pruning Matt was just talking about, the watering, you know, maintenance and forest monitoring, all that kind of stuff can be done easily by homeowners.
Are there any good resources you'd recommend for homeowners who want to learn more or keep an eye out for trees on their property?
Treesaregood.org will give you loads of information. Yeah, I mean, that's an ISA website, ISA sponsored, and they're world renowned arborist association that we're all members of, and you can plug that for tons of information on how to plant a tree, how to care for a tree, what things to look for in a tree. There's tons of literature on it, so yeah, it's a lot of self-help stuff.
Fantastic resource.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you both.
Welcome.